we all have like the one band that we super love, and then the rest of us are like,
what's the one band then that you guys all love?
That we all agree on?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Boundaries.
Yeah, Boundaries.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, I love Slipknot,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I would say
Slipknot, probably.
I would say Slipknot would be the one,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
like,
that's also the
universal
most,
for us.
I would say that. Well, yeah, probably Slipknot and not nu metal, but Gojira, probably.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I think you can trace back to our songwriting the most, obviously.
Definitely.
Whenever I need music gear, I always go to Sweetwater.com. If it's mics, headphones, or studio and recording gear, Sweetwater has you covered. Next time you need any music gear, support the podcast by using the link in the description and comment section below.
Forgive me if you catch me playing this game, but I have.
Dude, no, dude, you.
You can't pause it?
You can do whatever you want.
It pauses, but I've got some dailies I gotta.
What game is that?
It's called Idol Slayer. It's an idol incremental game.
Excuse
me? It's like, have you ever played like Cookie Clicker?
No.
We're gonna go down.
How about you ever played Dingle Bopper?
It's one of those. It's one of those games where you like start off with like no money, and then as you
turn it up,
as you make money, you can buy more upgrades to make more money to buy more upgrades. It's like it just doesn't end.
Yeah, it's
but
all
it's just
like,
you're in and fucked. You're in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, it doesn't cost any money.
But you
like,
have put money into it. A lot.
I've put a lot of money into
which
it.
Which doesn't make any
is
sense.
It, is it, okay, we won't put on a number. Is it above $100?
Yes.
Is it so below $1,000?
Yes. Is it below $1,000?
Oh God!
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Wow!
It is below $1,000.
Do you know the number?
Huh?
Do you know the number?
I don't. But I'm
that's
certain.
The problem.
I'm certain it's below $1,000.
It's
at least.
It's probably.
It's
between 8 and 1,000. Huh?
I'm going to say it's between 6 and 1,000.
Oh my God, dude!
At what point is
I've
it
never
too much
even,
money?
I've never put so much money into a game, like even close
maybe
to that.
Maybe it hasn't been $600.
Hold on. Blackjack.
Yeah, no, I'm about to say.
Okay, relax.
That's
a little different.
I'm
saying video games. Video games I've never put that much money
in. I spend a lot of money on in-app purchases.
microtransactions.
They
He's
have me
in.
Hooked.
Yeah.
That's how they just lock you in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're fucked.
It's my vice. I'll be playing a game and they're like, dude, we got this new skin. It doesn't do anything for you, but it's $20.
Like, fuck.
I want to look
dude.
So sick. Slaying rat men and Northlanders with the it's just
it's always about the rat men.
It's always
I'm
about
I'm so sick of hearing about the rat men.
When I get home I'm gonna slay some rat men.
You know, the most I spend on an app was probably like a little bit under $100. It was like a golf game I got addicted to. I think it was like a Tiger Woods thing.
Nice.
It was like 1 year that Apple came out with it. It was sick as fuck. And then you want like more like, I don't know, you want more
you
club
want more.
Options. You want you want the power stroke.
Yeah.
There it is.
Perfect.
Yes. That's it. That was a sick game. And since then, Apple has not topped a good golf game. It sucks that it stopped. It was fucking amazing.
PGA Tour 2012.
Yeah, I mean, I go through seasons where it's like, I'll be playing one game a lot and putting money into it, and then one day I turn the game on and I'm like, I never want to play this again, so I just erase it off my phone. This isn't the first game that I've put a bunch of money into.
How many games?
It's probably like the fourth.
Fourth?
Or fifth.
So you probably spent $3,000 in a game.
I don't know. It's in the thousands for microtransactions on phone games.
It's a base player thing, I
on
think, right?
On phone games alone.
Yeah. It's probably $2,000 on phone games.
Jesus.
I see now why you didn't want to do this podcast.
Well, we're not recording any of this though, right?
Yeah, dude, we've been going the past 5 minutes.
You're lying.
No. We're in.
This is it.
Oh, okay. Well,
are we going?
The camera's on.
The camera's on.
Okay,
so
yeah, I have a spending problem. I have a spending
we
problem.
We all do.
So
I don't. No way.
In your private lives, you're straight edge, but addictions come out in other ways, it seems.
Yeah. 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 Hey, it's we all up. Have our vice. Mine is spending money on microtransactions.
On video games.
Yeah. Yep.
So dope.
What other vices?
Yeah, let's go around and talk about our faults. Austin, yeah, you're
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
I just live in the gym, dude. I can't get enough of a pump.
God.
The games, bro.
endless quest for the pump.
Yeah.
How long are you in the gym for?
Like on a daily?
A daily.
Probably 48 like, hours. No, yeah. 48 hours in a day. Probably 2 to 3 hours a day. I work out almost every day, but I have my rest days because okay. they're essential for muscle growth. You have to, although I'd rather not, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's always just like if I take too much time off of the gym, I start to feel fucking crazy, so I have to.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing, like getting into the gym and then especially like going on tour and not having full access to a gym is like really strange. I don't know. Like, I mean, we finally have dumbbells now where we can do a little bit of something while we're on tour, but it's not the same, obviously, because you're very limited to what you can do. But yeah. I love the gym.
Were you joking when you said 2 to 3 hours a day?
No. I mean, like that's probably my max. I won't go any further than that. I don't like live in the gym.
What's your average?
My average, like how long I spend in the gym?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 2 to 3 hours.
That's almost 21 hours. That's almost a day.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
True.
But, hey, bro.
We're talking about addictions here.
I'm sorry.
We're airing it out.
Well, yeah, okay. I do smoke cigarettes. we exist. No, I'm just playing.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, wait for that to get clipped.
God. The nicotine straight edgers.
That's a really big adjustment, as you said.
Right there.
It's like the, that guy.
That's him.
That's the live shot. With me. It's like the people who,
how he sleeps.
Who vape with like 0 milligram nicotine, like juice in it. And they're just like, dude, it's straight edge. It's like, dude, like you're vaping. Why are you vaping?
Yeah.
Like it's just people with the box mods and they're like, dude, there's no nicotine. And they're like, when they're like doing twisters and shit.
Oh my goodness, Mike!
Silly,
Mike.
Oh, my vice.
Yeah,
I think it just runs with coffee in the band.
It's the Willy Wonka slot machine.
Oh yeah, it is. And blackjack.
Yeah,
okay,
blackjack.
I thought we weren't gonna bring up Wonka.
Wait, look up the Willy Wonka slot.
Yeah, look up Willy Wonka slot.
Yeah, Vegas.
That's
what's this?
This is the best. This is the greatest game on earth.
It's down.
No, it's right.
Look at that son of a bitch.
Is this in Vegas?
Yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah. It's everywhere. Palacio. It's everywhere.
He's.
All right, get that off of there. He's saying stuff to me.
Yeah.
He started twitching.
But that machine specifically, like we went to
Mohegan Sun.
We were at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, yeah. And I was like, dude, the Willy Wonka machine. I forget who I watched play the Willy Wonka machine first, but it was like on a previous tour. Someone was like playing the Willy Wonka machine. And I was walking with Mike and I was like, they got the Willy Wonka machine.
Was it Chris?
It could have been Chris Burgess from I Am. It could have been.
I feel like it would have been Sean.
Might have been Sean.
I don't think it was anyone from Burials. I feel like it was just like a couple months ago. Regardless, I'm like, dude, the Willy Wonka slot machine. You got to play the Willy Wonka slots.
I was like, all right. So
he put 20 bucks in and won 100.
100.
Immediately,
I was like, "Oh!"
And it's fun. They make Oompa Loompas dance around and shit. And like,
this is also Mike's first time gambling ever.
Not slots.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, first time playing blackjack. So I take the 100 blackjack, lose it.
We're losing.
Okay,
we're down a little bit.
And then I took out 100 before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Start smashing $500. No, $300.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, let's just hit Wonka on the way out. 20. Yeah. Another 100.
Another jackpot.
Just instantly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. So
Willy Wonka's been good to us. The last time we went.
we have a thing now.
Last time we went to the casino was not that long ago. And you put money in the Wonka machine and won again.
Yep, instantly.
Yeah, instantly. Yep. Just,
should we say what our end of tour plan is, or should we save that in case we want to make a video out of it?
I don't care. Run it.
We are putting our guarantee.
In Vegas.
In Wonka.
In the Willy Wonka machine in Vegas.
Because our last show's in Vegas, so we were like, we should put our guarantee on black. And I was like,
everybody
we need to put it in the Wonka.
Everybody does the guarantee, like, at roulette on black or red. They're always like, oh, come on, we got to put it down on black. But
yeah, so we're going to take all $26,000 we're making in Vegas and
putting it in the Wonka machine.
The Orthodox guarantee. $26,000.
You know what they call that? They call that beginner's luck.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, we're still at the beginning, Chris. So.
As a band,
and then it's all going downhill, right?
Listen, we're not going to talk about Elko, Nevada on this podcast.
Yeah, we're not
I'm fucking
about
sick
Elko.
Of that place.
No. Austin lost his shirt in Elko, Nevada.
Yeah.
Yep.
I had everything. I was up, and then it was down. Tremendous.
It was the dealer.
Everybody loves off
It was
days.
The dealer, dude.
Once
Marcia fucked that bitch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
my fault.
She
Mercy, she was great. I love Mercy. I wish she could have stayed the whole time, but they always do their shifts. And then Marcia came, and then she started taking everything from me. And then I lost all my money.
Held him at gunpoint.
Yeah, she literally said, hey, give me all of your money. And I was like, dude, fucking I guess. So then she took all my money, and then I left, and I was really upset about it.
There's Elko right there.
Yeah, Elko, Nevada.
Look up the Maverick Hotel and Casino.
Yeah, it was the Maverick Hotel and Casino.
Elko? Where is that?
It's right there.
Yeah, it's in the middle of fucking, it's like a college town, apparently. People go to college there.
I don't know what you could possibly learn in Elko, Nevada.
They had one blackjack table open, and it was a Monday night, and everybody was pretty down, like... Nobody was really stoked to be there.
They had Wonka.
There's competition. There's Wonka. Competition in Elko. They were talking about Gold Dust. The other casino there's taking all the
people.
Yeah,
casino beef. It's crazy. In Elko.
Yeah, but we went to Gold Dust first, and it is.
And they took all my money there.
Not cool.
It's not cool. You're
if
right.
If I had to base an opinion off of just sitting and watching my friends lose all their money, Gold Dust was not it.
Was not the
that
move.
Guy's having a good time.
Look
my
at
goodness, he's all oiled up.
Damn,
that's Austin about 2 years.
But here's the thing. Beginner's luck is a thing, but you have to feed the machine. That's what you have to do when you gamble. So I lost all my money in Elko.
Okay,
but at the end of this tour, or this first half, we end in Vegas, hotel somewhere. We're putting it all back down on blackjack, and I'm going to make so much money. That's
you
how this goes.
With the, you have to feed the machine thing sounds like the opening of some Gambler's Anonymous story.
Yeah, but yeah. The difference with Wonka is like he decides who wins.
Yeah,
but there's
Willie
no
loves Mike.
There's no feeding Wonka.
Willie like, loves it's, Mike. William Wonka is a fan of Miguel Blanco.
Look at him.
Except the Johnny Depp Willy Wonka. I hate that guy.
Yeah, I would box that dude instantly.
But not him.
Look at the freak.
He's bro, probably, if
why do you hate him? Because he looks like you.
I just don't
that's
like that. I just don't like that era of Willy Wonka.
No, he looks funny.
It's creepy. Awful.
That was Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And then
you got the new little Timothy Chalamet now.
Oh yeah,
it's probably fine.
They made him look crazy there.
Isn't that? Is this actually a thing?
Yeah.
Is this another?
That's coming up. Yeah.
Yep.
That's fucked up. All right, Adam. Last spice.
Coffee and hockey.
Hockey
for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't play it. I'm just obsessed with it. So,
Oh, just you need to watch.
Yeah.
Watch games.
Constantly.
And...
Yeah. I've got probably 3 or 4 or 5 podcasts that I listen to throughout every week during the season. And when it's off season, I can literally feel myself getting tired of music because I don't have my hockey podcasts. Mm-hmm. Like, I realized it this summer because I was listening to a record and I was like, I've listened to this way too much. Why am I running through shit way too fast? And I was like, oh, it's because Steve Dangle podcast doesn't have any episodes.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So,
Is there any teams up in Nashville?
Nashville Predators, yeah.
Okay. And that's, I'm sorry, I'm not versed in hockey
that's
at all.
Right.
All. I know.
Hey, neither am I. Okay.
I know the Ducks.
I just listen to them talk and we're in. I don't know. I don't know what it's all about. They just hit each other.
Oh, wait, well, you're less than 10 miles from the Honda Center, Anaheim Ducks.
Oh, currently. I thought you meant in Nashville. I was like, that's not true. But yeah, that's not true.
Are we about to beef? How do you feel about the Ducks?
It's hard to hate a team that's so bad.
Fuck, man.
Dude. I mean, I'm not even saying that like on like a your team sucks. Your team is literally at a point of like we are trying to be bad to get good draft picks to be better.
Dude, the funniest thing about this band is that sometimes, or at least we used to, I don't think we do anymore because we had to talk about it, but... Adam used to just like before sets be like, your hockey team sucks. And like there was one specific time in Winnipeg, Canada that we were playing. And he was just like,
that shit was awesome.
Dude, Adam was just like, yo, fuck the Winnipeg Jets. And everybody in the crowd was like,
it was crickets.
They were just like, dude, what the fuck?
they were like,
start this
beating
set.
Your ass.
Start this set. Let's start playing.
It's just funny because, like,
get the fuck
out
of
here. I would do it in Chicago and we would get, like, heckles back. And that was, like, the whole point is, like, go to cities where you know there's a strong presence of that and you get them to interact and then you have fun. And I'm like, oh, Canada, you love hockey. And then I said that, and nobody said words. Like, well, fuck me.
It didn't land.
You would do the vocal check. You'd go, check, check, fuck the Blackhawks.
Yeah, oh, wow. I did that a lot. Yeah.
This is serious.
Yeah. There's the Winnipeg Jets. If you come to the Stick to Your Guns show, you can get a Comeback Kid Winnipeg Jets RIP t-shirt.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I'm really stoked that it worked out for you guys, because we were close to touring together.
Yes. We were close. Yes.
And then it didn't happen. And then literally, I think like a week later, like this work got announced.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, it was within the week that we got the offer and was like, oh. And said yes, and then it got announced like immediately.
Yeah. No time at all.
Very short turnaround for that.
It worked out perfectly.
Sometimes it just works out that way. It's weird. Like one, you'll be stressing, and you don't have any plans, and you get like a random offer. It's so like, what? You can't plan it, dude. It's why it's always so like emotionally draining.
Well, and it's nice to get offers when you're on tour.
Yeah.
Which is how it's
supposed to work. To have more shows announced before you're done playing shows is the best.
We haven't had the best luck with that sometimes.
Really?
And then it's like, this rolls around, and we're like, yo, dope.
Yeah.
We're getting offers while we're on the road, and that's like how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So that was very cool. And this tour now is like polar opposite of like our tour we would have done.
Yeah.
Which is equally cool, because it's like, oh, we can step foot in this world for a little bit.
Yeah. Because we've never played to the Stick to Your Guns Comeback Kid crowd, I feel like, because they're a little older. They don't really like, you know, coming up in the new wave. So it's interesting playing to this crowd, but like it's been super sick every night. Got a lot of people that come up to the merch table like, never heard of you guys. This was crazy. Like, I'll be checking you guys out. I'll be telling all my friends about you. It's like fucking sick. It's cool.
Yeah. Being the sore thumb on the tour is dope.
Yeah.
It is.
We're definitely the heaviest band on the lineup. I think we're definitely the lowest tuned.
That's for sure.
Just barely.
Yeah. But
the other bands play in C sharp standard and we just play in drop. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Drop A or drop B?
Drop B. Yeah.
Nice. Psycho, dude.
Yeah. It's cool because, like, we all grew up with like the deathcore stuff, but also a lot of us were and are still very heavily involved in like our actual hardcore scenes where we live. And so being in like a very, I guess you could objectively call us a metalcore band, we do a lot of more like metal adjacent stuff. So to do something that's actually really heavily into the hardcore world was like a cool kind of out of the blue thing, especially just because like me and Austin in particular, Comeback Kid was like an introductory band to that world for me. So
Stick to Your Guns was mine.
Yeah.
Dude, when Diamond came out, I was like, dude, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, this is that positive, like, cool hardcore shit. And then it's like, oh, 10 years later. Okay.
That record turned on a lot of heads. I remember when it dropped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what band I was listening to today? Another Mistake.
Crazy. So he sings for this band, Tyler Short.
Okay.
I literally have one of their shirts in my car. That was like another one of those bands that I saw them play this tiny fest in Nashville and was like hooked. And not so much now, but early on Orthodox, you could absolutely watch. We did a tour with Another Mistake and Knock Loose in like 2015.
Mm.
And you could see, if you were to watch Another Mistake and then watch Orthodox, you could literally be like, oh, Adam really likes how Tyler moves as a vocal. Because I literally was like, his fluidity and how he performed, I was like, I want to be like that. And so Singer of Another Mistake was a huge influence on me just in figuring out how to be comfortable on stage. Mm. So that's crazy that you brought that up, because that band never got the recognition they deserved. But
Yeah. You mentioned that was like the first hardcore band that you really like connected with in like a deep level. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, with like a vocalist, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Perspective. So basically it's Tyler and Surge. Hmm?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it about System of a Down that people just love?
I don't know.
What is it?
I don't know.
Crazy. What's your take?
That's so fun.
I'll let everybody else talk first, because I can talk, I can talk too long on this.
Sit down for a second.
Yeah. The thing with System is that, I mean, like, it was so... I mean, like, I feel like the fan base can be pretty polarizing. Like, a lot of people either really love System or they really don't, just because it's weird, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I mean, there was, like, the BYOBs, Chop Sueys, like, and I always listened to that stuff. I guess it just, like, never really hooked for me. Whenever I got into nu metal, it was, like the most intense version of nu metal straight out the gate. So it was like Slipknot. So of course, whenever you listen to Slipknot and it's just like fast, 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 crazy, 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 like it's hard for me to go and listen to other nu metal bands like after that.
Mm-hmm. It's that and, other side of it versus System of a Down and Korn.
Yeah, where they're a lot slower.
Weird.
And like sludgy and weird. Yeah. I mean, like Slipknot obviously is weird on its in its own right, but it's like way more intense and crazy and in your face, in my opinion. So mm-hmm. whenever I listened to that shit, I was like, this is fucking sick. And whenever I went and listened to other bands that were like that, it just kind of felt like they didn't live up to the Slipknot for me for some reason because it mm-hmm. wasn't yeah. as crazy. So, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those bands never really came through for me at the end of the day. Like, I just wasn't that interested in it. But, you know, whenever I'd play Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, it's like fucking, what's the song?
Shimmy.
Shimmy. Like, whenever that song would come on, I'd be like, shimmy, shimmy, shimmy. Yeah, you know, like, that song's awesome. But, and I mean, like, a lot of System songs are awesome. I just never find myself ever listening to it on record. There is that one song that I really like by them, though. I forget what record it's off of, but there's no point in even talking about it because I don't know. I could look it up.
You could hum the riff and I could probably tell you it.
Well, yeah. I don't even remember if I'm like, I would have there is a System riff that I like though. You can go while I figure it out.
I mean, yeah, System of a Down was one of those bands that everybody heard Chop Suey.
Question. Good song.
Oh yeah.
That song is amazing.
Yeah. Dope song. Sick ass song.
Everybody heard Chop Suey. Everybody heard Toxicity. Everybody heard those songs. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they come out with a dual record, Hypnotize and Mesmerize, and, like, there's some weird tracks on that.
Mm-hmm.
Weird tracks.
Weird tracks. Genius songwriting. Genius.
Oh, genius. And it's just, Hobbies. Like, it's almost psychopath. It's almost a mockery of themselves where they're just like, yeah, we're gonna fuck off, but it's going to be incredible. And, like, that's what people like about that band. It's just
what,
like,
what song did we cover?
We've covered Before Any of You Were in the Band. The band actually covered Shimmy. Okay. And then we've done Prison Song and a bunch of different variations. And then we would cover the back half of Sweet Pea.
Sweet Pea.
Yeah, the breakdown of Sweet Pea.
Yeah, that song's cool too.
And Drop B. Yeah, we fucked
up. Yeah.
It was heavy as shit.
Dumb.
Dude, it was sick because in the song, like, he screams, like a motherfucker, like, so loud. And that was, like, my cue when we would do the cover. So I would just scream it. Like, it was actually cool. I loved playing that song.
Shiloh, you're obviously a massive fan.
I can, without a doubt, say I have never listened through a System of a Down record ever front to back on my own volition. Like,
he's definitely listened to it in the van with
me. I've definitely listened to it. The band's sick.
By
never in the mood.
Yeah.
Band is very sick. Would love to see them live. I'm never in the mood to listen to them on record.
Mm.
That's just like, yeah.
Well, probably because you have Adam shoving it in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I love Korn. That's, like, the one I love. Austin's not a big Korn fan. We all have, like, the one band that we super love, and then the rest of us are like, yeah.
What's the one band, then?
The one band what?
That you guys all love.
That we all agree on?
Yeah.
Ooh. Boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries. Yeah. There you go. I mean, I love Slipknot too.
I would say
Slipknot. Probably,
I would say Slipknot would be the one. Yeah, that's also the universal most, for us.
I would say that. Well, yeah, probably Slipknot and not nu metal, but Gojira. Probably those are the two that you can trace back to our songwriting the most. Yeah. Like, obviously,
definitely.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys kind of took the sound and did your own thing with it. It kind of reminds me of us in a weird way. There's a term I've never told anyone. But when we first came out, I obviously had the deathcore, which was already hated on. But I thought, like, this sounds like new death metal.
Yeah.
And when you guys, I heard you guys mention, like, new metalcore.
Right.
Yep.
But it's just such a term, like, people would just fucking bash you for it.
Yeah. I feel like if you put new in front of anything, people are like, yeah, whatever, poser.
Yeah. People aren't really open to it, I guess. But, like, you know, for what it is, it's literally like metalcore music with metalcore breakdowns that just have a lot of nu metal influence, like, involved with it. I guess, like, you could call it nu metal if you want, but, like, with a lot of older nu metal, you didn't hear a lot of breakdowns. So it's just, I don't know, like, kind of forging the two makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I mean, combining genres and, like,
messing with the discussion of genres can be fucking weird for everybody because they're just like, it's one or the other. Like, don't.
Well, that's the thing. Whatever. New metal, though, is
it's
like,
just music, man. It's cool.
New metal is such a huge blanket of stuff, like System of a Down.
Sonically, System doesn't really fit into new metal, but Korn, because of their Slipknot theme and where they played,
it's like.
I literally saw an argument that Slipknot isn't a new metal band the other day.
Oh, yeah. Because they're so death metal focused.
And I'm just like, bro. Like, the discussion of whether a band is new metal or not new metal is like, I feel like every new metal band gets it. And I feel like the most polarizing response probably would be Deftones. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think Deftones is a new metal band?
On record?
Yes.
In front of lights and cameras? Yes.
Yes. And that's how I feel. But a lot of people, and especially my friends, will combat me on that to no end. Like, if you listen to fucking Lotion off of Around the Fur, you don't listen to that and go, like whatever they would even consider it. Because whenever I ask people if Deftones is a new metal band and they say no, and I'm like, what the fuck is it? They don't really tell me a genre. And I'm just like, okay, well, like, you know, your argument has to be based off of what you think it is. And if you don't know what it is, then, like, they're like, well, I don't know what it is, but it's like, it's not new metal. And I'm like, I listen to Lotion, and I'm like, dude, that song is a straight up new metal hit. Like, that song is amazing.
And I think a lot of new metal back then gets lumped into that because they were trying different stuff.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it was for new metal, is like Limp Bizkit and Slipknot are over here. You know what I mean? But they were trying new shit and they were just being weird. They had DJs, they had all these members, they had all this weird shit. That's what made a new metal band back then. Mm-hmm. And then it sticks, you know. Deftones probably isn't as much a new metal band now.
Like next Deftones, I wouldn't. No, like if you listen to like Gore,
Ohms, or like the new one that's about to come out. No,
yeah, like I don't think new metal for sure. But like their first few records
is a new metal band in its standing, as it's like the historical standing of the band.
Yeah, even though they definitely do not claim that. There's like an interview or something with Chino where I think he's offended by somebody saying that they're a new metal band. Because he's like,
a lot of those dudes back then were like that.
That's not what we are.
I don't know what that shit is. We're not that.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. Like, you can claim whatever you want, but, like, I don't know. That's just my viewpoint on it.
The people are going to tell you what your band is.
Yep.
That's what it comes down to.
Of course. Like, you have a term put on you, and that's it. It's like, it's nothing you can do.
Whatever Suey wanted to be back then, y'all are a deathcore band.
That's just, period. Yeah. You have no say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just play, and that's
cool. And if we're a new metal band, cool. I don't think we are. Mm-hmm. I think we all love new metal and we toss it in there, but
I think
we're just a...
I just say we're a metal band.
It's a metal band.
There you go.
You can literally go part to part. It's like, oh, that sounds like metalcore. That sounds like hardcore. That sounds like new metal. That sounds like bullshit.
Yeah, it all just gets roped in, man, like straight up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Man, we would say that we're a metal band. People got pissed even more.
Oh, yeah, really?
So you guys aren't real metal.
Yeah, that's not what metal is.
Have you listened to death?
You're a fucking poser.
Yeah. Have you listened to death?
Obituary? It's like, bro.
Come on.
Yeah. Dude. Grow up or don't grow up. I don't know.
I don't know. Buy the tickets then. I don't know what to tell you.
Death to false metal.
Yeah, death to false metal.
That
yeah.
includes 95% of bands. There's the 5% that are actual metal bands.
Yeah, please kill me.
Yeah. Yep.
Kill me.
My fault.
Adam, did you form the band in your senior year of high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. it was a couple of other guys that were in Nashville, and they actually, I went to them. They basically were like, yo, we are looking for a vocalist. Do you know anybody? Because I played drums in all the first bands that I ever was in. And I was like, I don't know anybody that's like vocals looking to do vocals, but I'll do it. And that's kind of where that kicked off. So,
So you weren't looking to do vocals.
I was wanting to do it for a band, but I wasn't like trying to start one.
Yeah.
And then this opportunity came up and I was just like, yeah, let's do it. So,
Did you have any experience prior or no?
No.
Okay.
No, I blew my voice out every tour up until probably 2017 just because I didn't know what I was doing.
Dang.
Yeah.
So how'd you fix that? Because you guys been touring for like...
A lot of it had to do with just trial and error. And then Miss Cross, the Zen of Screaming, gave me some lessons not too long ago that also...
She's sick.
Oh, one of the most genuinely kind, knowledgeable people I've ever met. It was cool because, like, we did the lessons. So I took the actual lessons from her in 2021, so even more recently, right before we went into the studio for Learning to Dissolve. And the thing that, like, stuck for me was not so much the technique of what she was showing me, but more so, like, the science behind it, because I already was doing the right thing half the time. I just couldn't figure out how to make the right thing the whole of the time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And once she was explaining, you know, the ins and outs of what actually was happening, I could actually figure out and trigger the right things to happen in your brain, because it's a very tricky thing, because there's no neurons that, like, actually connect your brain to your vocal cords, which is why it's so difficult to learn the proper techniques for singing, screaming, all that kind of stuff. So
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until she told me. And I was like, wow, that's okay. So I can blame science. It's not just me. And yeah, that and then Randy at Graphic Nature, he did the record, and literally, like, the dude brings the absolute best out of everybody when you're tracking whatever it is you're tracking. And yep. Mm-hmm. He pretty much was like, yo, just go in, and he's like, whatever you feel you need to do, do like 70% of it, and you'll probably sound better than you ever did. I was like, okay. And he was right. And so, yeah.
That explains it, because it sounds like you guys are all on, like, just firing. You know, you just have to, you're all, like, on, like, max level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. All that kind of came in at the exact right time. And, yeah, learned a lot in our month up in Belleville.
Yeah, sick. Randy's a professional ass buster.
Yep.
He's dope. Yeah. He's hard on you. In the best way.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's a coach.
Best way. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Coach, mentor. And he's just a team player when it comes to it. He is the additional member of your band when you were there.
That's sick.
It's incredible. We love Randy.
Yep.
Yep.
Was there a talk before you guys in 2001 put out Body and Soul? Because that song, like, was the first one we guys actually all collabed. It's like a unit, right?
Yeah.
Was that on purpose? Was there like a talk prior? What's
With Body and Soul, that was one of the first songs that I wrote, or at least, like, I had a piece of it that was written for a while. And we wanted to make sure that we were still pumping out content, because this was around, you know, COVID. We weren't really doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was kind of on the content wave of trying to push, like, videos and them being silly and talking about band shit. And Orthodox just kind of, like, it was more dedicated to just writing music than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided, it's like, okay, well, like, let's start getting ready on the next record. Because when Learning or Let It Take Its Course came out, it came out like a month before COVID started. Yeah. So we put the record out, we went on a tour. The tour got canceled, and then, like, everything shit the bed because nobody wanted to listen to records. Everybody was focusing on not fucking dying from this disease. So eventually we started. I mean, I was always, like, writing music, but with Body and Soul, there was a piece of it, and then we were writing tons of other songs, and we wanted to put out a single that brought us back into, like, the music world without, like, but a song that definitely, like, stood on its own and could be its own thing versus, like, you know, songs that you have on records that kind of, like, transition into other songs, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of thinking, and what's actually funny about Body and Soul is that whenever I was writing it, it was one of my least favorite of the bunch, and we wanted to put out something, like I said, that could stand on its own, and we thought that that would be the one. And then we finished writing it. We went to Tate Mercer, did the whole thing, put it out, and it's like, you know, it's funny that that is a song that resonates with a lot of people. A lot of people really like that song. And for me, especially whenever I was writing it, it was just like, you know, this is good, but I don't know if, like, this is really my shit. But
that's funny.
And the only reason being is that it was one of my first, like, takes on this band, right? So,
mm-hmm.
And, yeah, like, when
it was an introduction to the record, of, you know, it was written all at the same time, and it was like,
right,
well, you know, we don't know what this thing is gonna be.
Yeah, because Body and Soul was a demo, like, for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I feel like probably a year before we actually finished writing the song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, I, you know, when I listen, I don't know if you're the same way or not, but when I write demos and I write songs, like, I will fucking, as soon as I finish writing and export it, like, I will get on my phone, go to my car, and, like, listen to it, like, 20 times.
Of course.
And then I'm just, like, sitting there, and I'm like, okay, that was sick. Do it again. And then I just do it again. And then I do it again. And then, like, when I go to, and then I go to work the following day, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to listen to that song again. And then, like, the whole drive to work, I just listen to the same thing on repeat. So, like, when I'm a year down the line and I've already listened to it so much, my brain's like, all right, like, this is... It's like when you listen to anything too much, you know? Mm-hmm. You listen to an album that you love, it's like your favorite record ever, and then eventually, you know the cycle. It's like your favorite record, but when you listen to it so much, it kind of sits on the back burner. Like, Metallica's my favorite band, and the first four records are amazing. I can't tell you the last time I ever listened to one of those four records. I can't tell you. Because I've listened to them so much just in my youth and growing up that, like, I know everything about them. And it's like kind of like that with Body and Soul. I don't know. I listened to it so much that whenever we were talking about putting on music, I was just like over the song, if that makes sense. So, but like, it's cool that people fuck with it. And I like, you know, playing it live and the live reception on it makes me love that song more now.
Yeah.
It revitalizes that for me. I don't know.
Totally.
It's a good song. It's a great song.
I don't even know if you remember this. We tried like two other variations of like other ideas we had, trying to fit something in, and then they wouldn't work. And then there was like one point I think we got to right in the middle of the song. We were like, we don't know where the fuck to go.
Yep.
And then I don't know whose idea it was. We were like, we should do this. And we go into whatever this bass part that's in the middle of the song is. And that basically unlocked, oh, we can do this into this, into this, into this, into this. And we're done.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was,
yeah, because for the longest time, it was half of a demo that I was like, I have no idea what to do after this part.
Yeah, we didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
Just at that writer's block wall.
Oh, yeah, big time.
What's next?
Mm.
And that's the lyric in the song.
Nice. Good job.
Yep. You did it, bro.
Just slid that in.
Can we turn him off?
You got to do it. You know, we were thinking in the studio, like
this is a body and our soul.
What is next?
What is next?
Not just body.
Dude, it's
what
funny.
If we did soul too?
Soul too.
it's funny, but it also it'll fucking piss you off at the same time. All it takes is one idea to unlock everything. But to come up with the idea. It
takes forever,
when does it come out fast? It's just.
No.
It's a pain in the ass.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah. This,
but when it happens, it's like, boom. There we go. Bam. Oh, dude, all right, we're good.
That's like,
then it just flows.
We were stuck on, we have a song on the record called Digging Through Glass, which is one of my favorite songs on the record. We were stuck at like, after the first chorus, we didn't know where to go.
Mm.
They were so Austin and I live in Nashville. They live in Columbus. They were coming down to Austin's house like every a couple weekends every month to write. So we get to that point where we were stuck and we were like, all right, I'm going to go home. It's late. I'm tired. I come back the next day and Austin's like typing shit and they're like, yo, check this out. And he hits play and the whole rest of the thing is done. And I was like,
yep, that's it.
Fucked. All right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
The most, the song that had the most reworking on it was definitely Voice in the Choir, the last song on the record. One of my favorite songs on the record, but that song as it started is nowhere near the same as like what it ended up being.
Dude, and that was,
wow.
That was our shit.
Yeah.
He had this demo and it was so stupid.
Yeah.
It was just like this crazy, like.
It's the intro of the song.
Yeah, it's the intro of the song, but it got so dumb afterwards. And him and I were like, yo, that's going in. And Adam was like, nope.
Adam and Shiloh were both like,
really?
This
is. Hated it.
They're just like, this
I
is.
I didn't hate it. I was just like, this is so.
Boring.
Not even boring. I was just stupid. Like, this is just so knuckle dragger heavy that I feel like it doesn't match our style. And then when we got to where we were trying to figure out the song, I don't even remember who it was. They're like, what if we throw that in there? And I was like, yeah, that'd be sick.
like all right. Damn it.
Now we open the set with it and it's sick.
Yeah, the problem was Austin wrote the part and it's a cool part. But him and Mike, like, you know when something comes out that is good, but like it's in a world that you're very familiar with, but a lot of people are experiencing it for the first time. So they act like it's the greatest thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, not to like downplay it, but like, I know you guys think it's the best because it's the first thing in this world that you've ever heard. So you're super stoked on it. But like, it's great, but like, it's not as great as everyone's saying.
Mm.
It was like this similar thing where like they wrote the part and it's a sick part. But Austin and Mike would just go ballistic every time they hit play on the demo, where I'm just sitting there like, it's fine. It's,
We were both like, it's a breakdown.
And they and they're just
like, no, it's
and they would
no, it's the breakdown.
The thing was, they would go ballistic. Really wanted it on there. And then when Mike's not the most decisive when it comes to writing stuff. And so when he wants a part, he's like, no, motherfucker, that's going on there. So
it's going
he's
on,
like shoving the back of his shoulder, like, yeah, we're putting that on
there.
Yeah.
And, I can't tell if Mike is just doing that to make the argument harder or if he actually thinks it's good. I've
never done that in
my
life.
We love arguing.
Because the way our songwriting goes, Austin writes something, we argue for an hour, and then the song's done.
Oh, that's perfect. That's a great process.
So
I
thought that's what this was. And then every time we'd go to Nashville, we'd just go sit in the room. We're like, all right, so what are we thinking? And Austin would just click, and then it would just come in. And him and Mike would both freak out. And I'm like, dude, not this again. What are we doing? So it's like, it became one of those parts where it's like, yeah, I get it, but what are we doing? And it's like, I was so desensitized to it. And now that it's in the song, I forget, like when we open the set with it, I forget that's the part that
I was like, I'm going to quit the band.
Yeah. Well,
I never thought it was a bad part. It's just like they would go ballistic whenever they hit play on that demo.
When I write demos and I show the band, like I have to put on a performance to make sure that they understand completely what the idea is about.
The subflooring in his office is going to be cracked when he moves out because he sits there and just.
Yeah, I play the drums. I play the air drums
just
so fucking hard.
As hard as he can.
And then I do the air guitar real hard. Yeah. I'm like, guys, listen, when we play this live, it's going to be like this.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then I'll let the track play, and then they're just sitting on the couch like, yep.
That's why we have the big pants music is because he's like, dude, this part right here is like big pants jump breakdown.
It's and we're like, what like, the fuck
it,
is that?
Yeah big dude. Pants, that's, big shirt. Everybody's jumping.
Big pant jump.
He literally, it's like you're going to like a writer's table for a movie. He's like, all right, I'm going to paint the scene for you real quick.
Yeah.
He does
it's
that
like,
with
okay,
every
there's
demo.
15 million
oh, yeah,
people
all
in front
of them,
of you.
Dude. Like yeah. fucking Fast Asleep, that track. Yes. I was like, all right, listen, dude.
Yeah.
That was right there.
Okay, so we need these pants.
That's the breakdown.
Yeah.
That's the
middle breakdown and head on a spike. That's exactly how I worded it.
That is it in tangible form right there.
I said, listen, big pants.
No.
It's going to be a whole thing.
Let me show you something.
But every time he plays a demo for us, it's like a full body performance.
Yeah, it's gotta be explained to the fullest extent.
And I'm like, dude, I hear it. Let me just sit here, close my eyes, and hear it. And he's just like, open your eyes, watch this.
You have to
hear what we're gonna do. Yeah.
It's like, no, you're
literally,
not hearing
like,
me. Watch.
He's like, you're not hearing me. Watch this. 50,000 people. And I'm like, dude, I see you. Can I listen to this part? He's like,
dude, that's how it was for Fast Asleep. I was like, okay, now before I play the song, Download Fest. Walking Fest. Okay.
Boom.
Aerial.
Beat pants.
Aerial shot.
Mug. That's who we're writing music for.
Aerial shot. It is it's the drone. It's taking the video of everybody in the crowd. And like, and then like I would hit space, let the song start. And I'd be like, okay, circle pit, right? Circle pit.
The whole area.
Walking is running in a circle. Dust is flying. This is what it's all about. And then the jump part. The jump. All right. And then we jump. Yeah.
And then the sea of people.
Yeah. That's the whole point.
Is that a
wow?
That's a T-shirt.
Thing, yeah,
that's a real T-shirt that we did.
Big pant music.
Yeah, we did that on our headliner.
Who am I showing this to?
We did that on the headliner. We did like a small quantity of them, and they went so fast.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
We have a couple that'll be on the online store whenever I email ML back.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not a joke. This is serious.
No, it's all about the big pants.
This is big pant business.
We put out.
This is big pant business.
Nerves and.
That
song is like very Cold Chamber esque in my brain, and I was like, okay. So the caption I put for the song was, "If you're not wearing big pants, don't even turn this fucking song on." Okay. And Revolver took that and made an article and says Orthodox brings big pants music, and I was like,
damn,
there it is.
Yeah, so that's right.
Sometimes the accent just like fucking works.
Yeah,
it's beast.
God dang, dude. Okay, Austin.
Hello.
How did
here we go?
How did you write the riff to Cave In?
Okay.
How did that riff come up?
So that song, I had a guitar with a floating bridge.
Okay.
And in classic Orthodox fashion, we love weird noises. Mm-hmm. And my brain is so fixated on trying to do things that are new. And I'm like, how do I write a riff that involves like things that haven't been done and blah, blah, blah. Obviously, it has been. And I took a lot of inspiration off of people that made weird noises with floating bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a Floyd Rose at the time. And, like, The Anticipation is a song that is based around just straight harmonics. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's a harmonics with, like, a fast, crazy chorus effect on it, which is crazy because whenever I found out, because for the longest time I did not know that. I didn't know how The Anticipation was because I didn't write that. And I didn't know how it was written. And then whenever I found out that it was just harmonics, I was like, that's fucking sick. Like, you can do so many weird things with just harmonics and, like, weird guitar shit. So when Caven came around, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't remember. There's like a video of a guy who plays in, I don't know if it's a band or if it's just him, but it's like Buried Alive, if you've ever heard of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
B-E-R-R-I-E-D.
No, he's fucking insane.
Yeah, that guy's crazy at guitar.
I thought you were saying, have you ever heard of the band Buried Alive?
No. Different band. No, we're not talking about Scott
Boyle. Adam's going to be pissed for a second.
Yeah, dude. No. Not New York hardcore band Buried Alive. Are they New York or Connecticut? Doesn't matter. Anyways.
Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo. Regardless.
Throw it in there.
Regardless, he has this song where he's, like, doing this weird, like, bounce thing with his whammy bar where he's like kicking it down with his foot, and it's, like, making this insane noise, and it's like, and I was like, that's, like, you can do some crazy shit with a whammy bar, and basically all I would do, like, whenever I started the Caven riff, it was, like, just harmonics and then, like, pushing down on the bridge so it lifts the note, you know? So whenever you would hit the harmonic, it goes, like, whenever you push it down on that side. And so that's how I wrote it. And live, I just do it with a pedal now that just, like, lifts the pitch because sorry, Floyd Rose, but I, like, hate Floyd Rose guitars because they're just annoying to keep up with. Mm-hmm. But, and just, like, changing strings and just, like, having them set up right. Also, I play guitar weird. The nuts are not, like, set up right for the way that I play guitar. So I don't use floating bridges anymore. But whenever I would do that, I mean, like, now, yeah, it's just a pedal that just, like, raises. I have a pedal that raises the pitch, and I have a pedal that does, like, the brrrr. Because when I wrote the intro, it was just the harmonic pushing it up. And then at the end of the song, you know, just fucking pulling the whammy down, doing it just boom. And then I wrote the digga 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 boom.
Yeah.
Digga 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 boom.
That part is fucking ridiculous,
yeah,
dude.
It's sick.
Holy
that was
shit.
The first full song he sent us, like, where it was start to finish, and he sent it in the group chat.
Oh, wow.
And I immediately just called Mike and was like, hey, bud, good fucking luck.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a song that, like,
notes.
There's actually a very old video, and I don't even know if you know this. There's a very old video of me and Mike in the old Chamber Hanging Moon practice space.
I've seen it.
And we're writing, like, the middle riff, or, like, I'm playing the middle riff of Caven, but he's playing it as a two-step. So it's like dun 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 dun, and it's like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
I do remember that.
It's super old. It's super old, and I remember just having that riff locked in from years ago, and I wrote the song. Like, it was, I haven't had a moment like this with writing music in a long time. This is a one and done situation where whenever I had the idea in my head, I had the entire song laid out, like. Just like, I was like, I remember I was driving my car. I was just like, okay, so that would, like, yeah, that would be sick. And then I'd be like, that would be sick. And then I just, like, it just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going until I literally was like, I know exactly what this song is going to be, like, front to back, have the entire situation and transition list, like, laid out, went home and just tracked the demo and then sent it to them. And they were like, we don't even, like, there's literally nothing on this we want to change.
The only thing that changed from that song was, the back half of, I guess you could call it the bridge riff, where Randy was like, oh, take the guitars out of this so the vocal can be.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that changed from the moment that song was written.
Oh, yeah.
The band and then down, bam. Yeah, it's like.
He goes, delete that.
Delete that.
Yeah, that was the only thing that changed. It was just a one and done, like, all right, that's the song. It was cool. I don't know. I like now I just like write half or like a minute or like 30 seconds of songs and then I let them fucking sit in my Dropbox for like 6 months. That's silly. I'll just write it and I'll be like, that's sick. And then I'm like, all right. And then I go and I listen to it again and I'm like, that's sick. And I don't do anything with it. And then eventually I'll have to be like, okay, I'll turn this into a song. I don't know how, but I'll do it.
So,
I don't know.
So you guys stockpile.
Yeah. Riffs are constantly in the tank. For sure.
Dude, I need to start stockpiling.
Yeah.
And then you send them to the group chat, and then Adam goes to Humphrey Street Coffee. Starts writing songs.
Yep.
Shout out Humphrey Street.
Humphrey Street.
Yep.
What is it about going somewhere else that just makes you...
It's unfamiliar and there's no distract... Like, there's distractions, but it's none of my business.
Yep.
Like, if I hear some... If I'm at my house, I've got two 60 to 70-pound dogs that... constantly need attention or I'll be writing something and be like, oh, I need to do this. And I'll go take care of something in the house. But like, if I go to a coffee shop, like, yeah, there's a lot of unfamiliarity, but that makes it even easier to just be like, I don't care. I'm right here.
Yep.
So
that's the same way with me in writing. And I mean, like some of the way that I write music and like my ideas will fluctuate depending on where I am. And I feel like that's, you know, the case with a lot of artists. I mean, you know, when we wrote Learning to Dissolve, we were in a fucking warehouse like downtown in Belleville, New Jersey. And I feel like the vibe might change a little with this next record because we're going to be in a cabin in the middle of the woods because Randy moved into a cabin. Sick. And yeah, it's sick.
Yes.
Dude, there were riffs for Orthodox that like whenever I needed inspiration, because a lot of the times, I mean, you probably have this moment, you've been writing music for a long time. Like where you just pick up a guitar and you try to write something and it kind of feels like you're just doing the fucking same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, dude, I would feel that way. And I mean, there were times with writing music for Orthodox that I would like, you know, I used to live in South Carolina and my like garage was just infested with spiders. Oh, like not infested, but like, you know, there's webs all over the place. Like, sometimes whenever you'd go out to grab a drink from the refrigerator, a cockroach would, like, scurry out of the way because it was always dark unless you turn the light on. And there were times where I'd go out there with my fucking practice amp and, like, sit on the bench in my garage to write music just because, like, I needed a fucking change of scenery.
Of course.
And it, like, adds an element to it. I mean, that's why moving into my new house, I have my, like, my desk and my writing setup used to be in my room, and now I have a completely separate room dedicated to that.
It's fucking huge.
Yes, it changes everything.
It changes everything.
Because when you wake up and you're in your fucking room, and it's like, oh, I sleep here and I'm creative here, and
I jack off here is too much. Dude.
Oh, dude, it's fucked up. Yeah, you know? Man. So when you go to the creative space,
yeah,
you enter that space knowing that you're going to be creative, be an artist, try and make something, you know, versus like being in your room in your bed and you're like, I just fucking sleep here. I like having the separation. But whenever it used to be where I would write music in the same space, room, and it's just like,
that's tough.
Yeah, dude. You're just like, bro, feel like I'm recycling everything. So it's nice to be able to like have it. I mean, not only do I have the side studio room like that I write all my music in, but I also have like, you know, our rehearsal space downstairs and like an unfinished garage that we, you know, rehearse at before tours, but like I can be loud in there. So I'll like turn my amp on and just like fucking just go for it. And well, it's sick.
That creates a different element too. Like the, when you and I wrote at the studio, you came up with that riff, the breakdown, because it was loud.
Yes.
Loud. Just up there. He's,
I took advantage. Yeah,
he's in the middle of the control of the drum room, live amp. We had it set up because we were practicing for a show that was supposed to be after the recording. And he's just up there. He's just going. We're like, what the fuck is he doing? Like, and he's just,
it sounded like something was broken.
Yeah, he wrote a whole song, but it was just because he could crank that fucking amp and just be in his own space and just.
Yeah. It was nice.
Versus like plugging into an interface and doing it in front of a computer. He was just like super raw, super organic. And that element helps a lot too.
That shit was sick, straight up. Like, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. I kind of was just doing it on a whim because I was like starting to run circles around my brain on things that I wanted to do. And then I just went upstairs and like kind of fucked off from everybody and turned it on and just got really loud and just started like messing around and playing riffs. And then I landed on something and I was like, this is fucking sick. And then we wrote a song out of it that's not out.
Yep.
It's a B-side.
Mystery so song.
Mystery song. We call it Spy Song.
And if you've seen us live in the last year, you probably got hit during the breakdown of the end.
Yeah.
Do you guys need to sell, like, baggy pants?
It
sounds like this is
As funny as it is, I think the process has started. We can't really talk about it, but there might be something going on.
Good. I want to get geeky for like a minute or two.
Yeah, talking about the floating bridge wasn't geeky at all.
Yeah. one or two more things, and then we'll fucking move on. So learning to dissolve. What pickups are those? And then what amp were you using?
That would be a Randy question. We ended up using his Jim Root with an Evertune. I believe they were Fishman's. I'm not a big Fishman guy. And I really wish I got to use my own guitar on it, because I was running a Black Metal with the Black Winters, and some of the solos on the record were done with that guitar. But the Fishmans that are in the Jim Root that Randy has sound great.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a PV Invective and a Block Letter 5150, like kind of just like both of the tones were merged, if that makes sense. Yeah, and we did that. And I don't remember what overdrives we used. There was like a big motherfucker, dude, like huge, like rectangle guy with like 8,000 switches on it that I didn't understand. But like Randy was just twisting shit and just being like, how's that sound? And I'd be like, gong, gong, gong. Yeah, it sounds cool. And he'd be like, all right, hold on. What about now? And I'd be like,
mad scientist with the pedals.
Boom.
Randy loves the pedals.
Yeah.
He's a noise freak.
He'd just be like, and then I'd be like, scrandon. And then he'd be like, how's that? And I'd be like, yeah. And then he'd be like, yeah, dude, scrandon. That's the orthodox way. That's how we talk about riffs. It's scrandon. But yeah, just fucking beep, 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 beep. Yeah, play. How's that? Dope. All right. How's that? Dope. Cool. And then I don't know. I let him do whatever. I mean, we did have a little bit of an argument because I was kind of in like a scooped phase at the time. I was a low mids guy.
That's always a weird argument.
It is. But it's tough. I don't know. So yeah, like sometimes mids are my friend, sometimes they're not. And
I still go back and forth for mids. And it's just tough, dude. That's like the one.
And producers hate it, dude. They hate when you don't like mids because I'm just like, I don't know. They're kind of. I don't know, we could turn him down. And then Randy's like, bro. And I'm like, dude, just a little.
It's tough, dude.
Please.
I still don't get it.
Dude, Tate Mercer is an avid mids fan. Like, he hates that I don't like mids sometimes. Like, sometimes we'll be in the studio and I'll just be like, I don't know, man, you're turning mids down. He's like, I'm not turning the mids down at all.
His guitar tones are so sick, though.
But his guitar tones are great.
He nails it.
Yeah, he's very good at that.
Tate's dope with guitar tones.
Shout out to Mercer.
Yeah.
It's tough because it'll sound great, but is this actually going to cut through?
Yeah.
Exactly. Drummer and vocals and bass.
That's the thing. Mids are very important for making sure that your guitars are distinguished and they come out.
That you're fucking there.
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes, you know, I just like the fucking, like, it's cool, but yeah.
Adam's pissed.
But they are very important, and I'm starting to come around. When it comes to the full mix, mids are important. When I play the guitar by myself, I'm like,
fuck the mids, dude.
Yeah, I'm like, and I'm like, yeah. And so, but all together, they're important. They're essential. You need mids.
They are.
Yeah. Fucking mids.
Yeah. But yeah, 5150, Block Letter. And a PV Invective. Those are the two apps that we used.
I knew for sure there was a 5150 in there.
Yeah,
I knew
absolutely.
Once I hear like a certain frequency, I'm like, that's
it.
That is definitely it.
And it's sick. Yeah. Block Letter 5150 is one of my favorite amps ever. We used some other PRS amp for leads and solos, but I don't remember what it was. But that was like the only time we ever used it was for just leads and shit.
Yep. Sick.
Just around the studio. Mm-hmm.
We don't have that 5150 anymore.
Yeah. Shout out you.
I sold that bitch.
Wait, dang.
We are not going to talk about it. Because I'm still mad at Mike about that.
Fuck.
He's like, dude, I sold the thing for money. I needed money.
It's in good hands.
It is.
But that 5150 was also super problematic.
Yeah.
Yep. For a long time, it was just like always having issues, and it was like not reliable.
It was only on the Casey Strain tour where it really started fucking up.
It screwed us big time on that tour.
Yeah, so it went from being awesome for a long time to straight up like shitting the bed completely, like multiple times.
Anybody that saw us, the Webster,
Connecticut
first show back
November 2021.
We're sorry.
We're very sorry that you only got to hear us play 3 songs.
That was the worst set this band has ever played.
You guys cut like four songs. It was
at least 4.
I think we cut more songs than we played.
We did.
For sure. It's the worst. It's the fucking worst.
Yeah, because we're avid about staying on time. And, you know, that was a situation where it was so bad. That
was your fault.
And you can blame that block letter.
Yep. Old bitch took a shit, man.
Old
bitch took a shit.
It happens, dude.
I'm gonna steal it back.
That's why I sold her. I was like, all right, I'm gonna get you fixed and go find a new home.
Yeah,
get the fuck out of here.
He didn't sell it for like the resell, like the Eddie Van Halen resellers do on the internet right now.
I hooked it up.
The homie hookup.
Homie hookup.
It's in good hands.
Shout out Boundaries. They own that head now.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Bitches.
I got a 5152 and it's sick as fuck, dude.
Yeah.
I need, if you go PB, you gotta collect them. Because it's just a matter of time when it's gonna shit it, you know?
That's
It's a matter of time. Yeah, we probably went through quite a few of those. They just, one random day, you plug in for a show, it's not turning on.
No, it's just,
it happens.
It was silly.
Sucks. It's why you gotta have a backup.
Oh, yeah.
Guitars are so stupid.
Yeah.
They are.
I'm on the Kemper vibe just because, like, it's a lot easier to manage. There's not a whole lot of issues with it. I had an issue the other day, but that wasn't the Kemper's fault. So like that's where that ends. I feel like it's a lot less maintenance for sure. And I mean, I wasn't big on digital shit for a while until I finally tweaked something that I like with it. And now I'm team Kemper and like digital. Shit. Yeah. I mean, I still want to do a quad and like test out and shoot out all of the shit with it, but yeah, it's just a lot easier to keep up with for sure.
Sick.
Yeah.
Adam, what was it like growing up in the Nashville scene?
When I was coming into it, it was in the peak of the Christcore era. So it was a lot of skinny jeans and straightened hair.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever knew anything about straightened hair or not, but
yes, but I never heard that term before, actually. I never heard it in my
life. Oh, Christcore?
You never heard it until right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Scream the Prayer stuff, like Impending Doom, Sleeping Giant, like all the big for today probably is like the one that everyone would look at the most of. But all the big breakdown then preach bands. That was like a huge deal in the Southeast. And so that was
churches and
really prevalent in the Southeast in particular. And so going to shows back in the day was a lot of bands like that. And then there was a lot of local bands that it was cool because at the time there was a venue called Rocket Town, which I actually saw Suicide Silence at. I think y'all were out with Danza and Molotov Solution.
That's cool. That's a cool venue. I remember that.
But what was cool about it was they had like a skate park and all of the actual staff was a part of the scene itself. Mm. So even though it was corporately run, it was still kind of local community vibes. And so local shows for a long time, because you had these local people with a corporate backing for promotions, were huge. There was two stages, like a big room stage that was like 700-800 cap, and then a smaller stage like a 250, and local shows would be on like the big stage.
Wow.
And so, you know, we had A Plea for Purging was like the band from Nashville. As Hell Retreats toured out of Nashville a bunch as well. So a lot of those bands were kind of, that was like the upbringing. And then kind of like a few years into that, I started dipping into the actual like hardcore show stuff. And there's a venue called The Anchor, which is this church venue a block from Rocket Town. And then there was another venue a block further down called The Muse. That was where you went to get jumped. So it was, those were like where the real crazy, crazy shows would go. Cause Rocket Town at the base of it was a Christian venue. So they had some different rules about like, you can't stage dive and all this kind of stuff. So when the hardcore shows would come to town, they would usually try to go to one of the other places, and that's where it was wild. So
Muse, is that by the porn shop?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think it's Miranda's anymore. I think it's just an actual bookstore or something. Oh no, I think it's a parts manufacturer. The Muse itself is Domino's now.
Yep.
Damn. Yeah. You pass it every single day.
Yeah. You pass it all the time. And I almost want to walk in and be like, you don't know the shit I saw in your kitchen. Like, damn. Yeah. It was.
I saw so many fights here.
I got my ass beat in that kitchen.
Dude, literally. I mean, I saw people get like stabbed during shows there. Really? It was a place where when I talk about it to people, I'm like, as a teenager, I should not have gone there. I would literally have my dad drop me off at Rockettown, and then I'd walk 2 blocks to the news because I wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah, it was dark times. So
it's crazy that you just walk a block or two, and the whole vibe changes. 100%. It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's not like that anymore because Nashville's just a completely different city than it was back in those days. But
yeah, what's Nashville like now? I mean, being outside, you just see like this. It's like, you know, you got the Nashville and the Austin. It's just like, I don't even, like, it's just becoming.
It's one of the top three fastest growing cities in America. It's unreal. I think it's between that, Austin, and I think maybe Phoenix or Mesa, one of the two. Mm. But yeah, it's just the tourism started flooding in and everyone was there and actually liked the culture of the city. So a lot of people, when they were like, we need to move, especially during COVID, when they were like, if I'm going to be stuck in my house, I want to be stuck in a different house.
Yeah.
Everyone just came to Nashville.
So. Yep.
Fuck.
Hell yeah. That rent went.
Yes. Cost of living has jumped significantly in the last couple of years.
Yeah. So that's, yes. So that's obviously the major con of having a growing town.
Yeah. It's
traffic.
Yeah.
Oh,
traffic sucks. I mean, it's nothing like, I mean, I say it's nothing like out here. It's getting to where it's like out here because we don't have 8-lane interstates, but
yeah.
It's,
if you know how to navigate it,
definitely have your ways where you're like, oh, I'll take this one way road to this and then whatever.
But yeah.
It's got its benefits because there are so many things in Nashville that were not there before.
Mm-hmm.
But the cons are, as you said, like kind of just being stuffed in between a bunch of people that aren't from the times before. You kind of,
yeah.
It's not like I can gatekeep the city, but it's kind of like I'm every now and then I'm like, man, I do kind of miss when there wasn't 7 buildings right there.
Yeah.
But,
oh yeah, shit's changing all the time. And I moved there fucking like 4 years ago.
Yeah, you're new to it.
Yeah, I'm still, I moved right before the pandemic and now like driving around and shit, like there are so many buildings that I'm like, how the fuck did that even get you?
We go on tour and we'll go back and there's literally,
there's new shit all the time.
I think the waiting list for a contractor to get his hands on a crane at the moment is like a year and a half long.
Jesus.
Really?
Christ.
Just to get a fucking crane?
Yeah. It's been like that for years. But yeah, to get to, because there's only so many you can have active within a certain radius. But in particularly downtown, it's just sprouting up so many buildings that the waiting list to be able to build anything within the actual like Davidson County area is ridiculous.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys need crane to carry those heavy ass riffs, dude.
That's right. we parked one at Austin's house a couple of years ago and won't let it go. So
yeah, it's taking up a lot of space, but we're good. It does its job.
Well, dudes, I appreciate you guys coming here on your day off.
Yeah,
you know it's cool.
Yeah,
what's tomorrow?
Observatory.
So we're in
Santa Ana.
Oh yeah, well, crazy. Yep. Well, thank you. This is actually my first time flying in.
Yeah, how's that?
I was gonna say you have a show tomorrow in San Antonio.
Yeah, so I really appreciate you guys being a part of this kind of new journey for me. So I really,
yeah, cool.
Man. Yeah,
I've been up since midnight.
Jesus,
dope.
Yeah, that's sick, dude.
Jesus, sick.
I'm still here.
Get a few more monsters.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank God for coffee.
Yeah. Absolutely. Garza Podcast Coffee. You can find it at
garzapodcast.edu.
Conceptcafes.com, baby.
Yeah.
Dude, I didn't start drinking coffee until I was 26, 27, and have not gone back.
It's because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep. Yeah.
It is, man.
I also got into coffee super late. I only started drinking coffee like really 6 years ago.
How old are you?
30. So 25 is like when I started drinking coffee. Before that, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once you get that first cup, you're like,
once you start having good coffee and you realize that like you can have coffee that actually tastes like it smells.
And that's
the thing. It's like when it's like Mike will drink anything.
Mike is a dumpster.
Drummers do that. Drummers do.
He'll drink
any coffee.
I loves Pilot coffee,
dude.
We had coffee yesterday that I almost didn't finish. It was horrible.
Yep.
I don't know what the place was, and I was like, damn.
Y'all fucked
up. We could shout her out if
you
We don't got
to die. We don't need to slander them, but it was my
fucking bad.
My macchiato was pretty bad.
Yeah,
it was
pretty
rough.
Bad.
It's it takes a lot for everybody to be in unison of like, this is bad. Because if I say something that's not good, he'll be like, yeah, check this out. And he's just like, it's all the same shit.
It's all the same shit.
That
was on some different shit.
That was some different shit.
Yeah. Was it like a local spot or what?
We'll call it that.
It was on the north end of Hollywood. I don't know where the hell it was.
Here in California? Oh, shit.
Interesting. Yeah. But we did go to a good place today. Coffee Code.
It
was probably 20 minutes from here. We got that.
I mean, we have a lot of good coffee.
We
have more good coffee than we have bad coffee.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever I was talking about how bad my Americano was yesterday, I was like, I can't remember the last time I had a bad Americano, but it was just
awful. This right here for whatever city we're going to. Keep a list of the shops. So if you ever need a recommendation, San Antonio, San Antonio.
There's a
place
shop
called Estate in San Antonio you should go to. It's right next to the venue. It's fucking awesome.
Estate? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Estate. Okay. It's on the other side of the train tracks.
And I don't know any of the places until I walk into it. And then I walk in, I'm like, I remember this place.
Yeah. Yep. I have a list. Yeah.
And I remember that barista.
The Vice.
Yeah.
The Vice.
Also, if you want something to kill time with, you can sit at the train tracks by your venue tomorrow and just watch people fly over them too fast just catch the underside of their car.
Yeah. It's awesome. There is a crazy train track. I know what venue now.
Yeah.
But people will always hit that too fast.
And just
and there's also a super good barbecue spot near there. They do this brisket taco.
Don't even get me started
on brisket tacos.
I'll tear it up on
that little caramel. Nah, but there's a good barbecue spot near there. But we love coffee and we love ice cream. We're an ice cream.
Ooh,
band.
Ice cream, yeah.
Oh, big time.
We don't have time to talk about how much we love ice cream.
Yeah, he was trying to close the episode about five minutes ago.
Yeah, you were trying to
close. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
But we love ice cream. I know you got a plane to catch, but we're talking about some Ben and Jerry's fish food. That's the best ice cream.
You left your fish food at my house and I destroyed it.
I bet you did. I bet you did. Not a doubt.
I opened
my
freezer. There was one day I came home from work and I was like, dude, there's got to be something sweet in my freezer. And then I opened it.
That's the best ice cream in the world right there.
And there was fish food.
My goodness. That is it.
Look at her.
You want to see me play the worst set of my life? Bring me a pint of that right before I go on.
I need to try this one. I always see it. I never tried it.
Dude. Yeah. Oh.
Wait, is it always non-dairy?
No.
It's always like, I'll go like,
they have the non-dairy.
They got it for adults too.
Yeah.
Jesus.
All right, dudes, let's fucking close the shit up.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Thank you. Where can people find you guys?
OrthodoxTN.com. OrthodoxTN on Instagram.
And we have a YouTube now. We just started a YouTube. We plan to do fun things with it.
Oh, yeah. There's a YouTube channel now.
I forget what the actual link on it is.
Cool. We hope to do fun things with it. So.
I'll put up the link tree in the description.
That'd be awesome. Thank you. You can find it all there. That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, again, guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good show tomorrow and good rest of the tour.
Thanks.
Thank
you too.
All right, everyone. That's it. Later.